Resting Places.
Well, tonight in our series, visiting the world and Australia's most interesting cemeteries, we are returning to Sydney. We've got three in one tonight because we're going to visit a couple of, well, three different cemeteries. We spoke a few weeks ago with Sydney historian Lisa Murray, who wrote a field guide to the city's cemeteries. We were talking with her originally about Waverley Cemetery, and Lisa's joined us again to tell us about some lesser known favourites. Hello, Lisa. Welcome back.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Now, tonight, firstly, we're off to Rookwood, which is actually quite well known within Sydney, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's Sydney's largest cemetery and probably the largest cemetery really in Australia. And some even claim it's the largest in the Southern Hemisphere. I haven't walked through them all, so I'm not going to stand by that last bit. But it is certainly the largest cemetery for the Sydney metropolitan area and is highly significant and is still functioning today.
Yeah, it is. It was built in 1867, so that makes it older than Waverley, which we spoke about last time. So why was the site chosen where it is?
Well, that's very interesting the way that this site got chosen. New South Wales government organised it, and they were actually looking for a site for that would function for all of Sydney from the 1840s. Mm. When we were talking about Waverley, we mentioned the Devonshire Street Cemetery, which was where Central Station now is. And that was, in fact, the sort of main cemetery for the centre of Sydney from 1820 through to the 1840s. But it was getting increasingly filled up and overcrowded. And so from the 1840s, the government was looking for somewhere. There's a lot of criteria that you need to be able to find a good spot for a cemetery. Mm. And so it did take them a while. They chose somewhere else, but they on what we now know as Moore Park, what was then called the Sydney Common. But no one particularly liked that, and it was too sandy and whatever. So it never happened. So this became the site. It took a lot of effort to set aside. And when they did, they decided, right, well, we're really going to put a lot of land aside. They set aside 200 acres originally, which was vastly bigger than most other cemeteries in New South Wales. Most cemeteries were lucky to get 10 acres.
Wow. So you said there are lots of criteria that you need to meet for a cemetery. What are some of the criteria and the hoops you need to jump through?
Well, the government was becoming increasingly aware of sort of the health issues associated with burials and things like that. And there was a movement in by the sort of mid-19th century for the idea that a cemetery should be in a secluded place, that it wasn't something that should be in the hustle and bustle of the middle of the city, the way the Devonshire Street cemeteries had become. They weren't that when they started, but by the 1860s, they were totally surrounded. So they wanted somewhere that was out of the way, in a sense, but they still needed people to be able to get there. Mm. And so they had to try and work out a way that they were going to have a large cemetery that would function for the growing population of Sydney in the late 19th century and that would be functional and utilitarian. Mm. They chose the area, what at the time was called Haslam's Creek. They chose it there because it was right near the Western Railway line that had opened in 1855.
Okay, and so how did people get there?
So this is the really novel thing that they decided to do. They decided to use the railway line. So they built a mortuary station specifically on Regent Street near what was the railway terminus at Redfern at the time, and then they built one in the centre of this 200 acres that they set aside. Mm. They set the receiving house. They had special rolling stock hearse carriages that you could put the coffins in.
Oh, wow.
And they had, and so the railway station was designed so that the funeral cortages could come up and all of the mourners could like come out, get onto the train and take the train out to Rookwood. And people along the way could go too. So, you know, it travelled through Newtown and out on what we now call the Inner West Line. But it went out, and if there was a funeral that happened, say, in Newtown or perhaps in Stanmore, and they wanted to go out, and they would actually tell the railway staff, they'd flag down the funerary train and it would stop and pick them up and take them out there.
When did people stop using that train?
So it's really interesting. It ran twice a day, right through into the 1930s, 1940s. Mm. But it was all closed and everything was demolished and taken apart in the 1950s.
Mm. So there are a lot of sections in the cemetery, a lot of different religions represented. Was that always the case?
That was always the case. They set aside a whole suite of different denominations so that it was the cemetery for everyone. And that's what's so fascinating about Rookwood today, because they have extended it. They're still burying there. And so really it is this amazing kind of microcosm of the Sydney community and the multicultural community that we are today. It's just an extraordinary place.
And it turns out that setting aside that huge amount of land, I mean, you know, I think some of the constraints are starting to be reached, but, you know, the fact that it's still, you know, burying people today tells you that they actually were thinking for the future.
That's right. And I think that's what all big, you know, infrastructure should be doing. Yeah.
Next up, we've got Dr. Lisa Murray here, a Sydney historian, author of Sydney Cemeteries, a Field Guide. We're off to St. John's Cemetery in Parramatta. And when we're in our Parramatta studios, if we go down to the window from the 39th floor, we can actually look out and see this cemetery. Is this right? This is one of the oldest in Australia?
It is. It's the oldest cemetery that is still intact, that hasn't been sort of cleared or moved or anything like that. It was established back in 1790 when Parramatta was known as Rose Hill. And it's really significant because it is the oldest cemetery. It's now enclosed by a brick wall. And so it gives you a real sense actually of what some of the other early cemeteries were like. There was once also a cemetery under Sydney Town Hall in the centre of Sydney, and it was enclosed as well by a brick, high brick wall. And so St. John's Cemetery gives you that sense of what some of these early cemeteries were like.
What sort of people are buried there?
I think it's really interesting. It's got everyone from convicts to the wives of governors buried there. So it really did bury for everyone. And originally it was actually, it had a few sort of burials that weren't Anglican. So it was, St. John's was connected with St. John's Church, later St. John's Cathedral at Parramatta. But originally, when it was set aside, they kind of had to bury everyone, because if you died in Parramatta, you weren't going to be taken all the way back to the colony down at Circular Quay. They were burying you at Parramatta. So there is a couple of documented graves of other denominations within the cemetery as well.
Now, Lisa, I went for a poke around in that cemetery years ago, and I'm not sure if it's changed, but I was actually quite shocked by, if this is, you know, one of the most historic cemeteries in Australia, it didn't seem to be kept very well. What's your take on it?
Well, I think there's always this balance with cemeteries, and particularly with cemeteries that are closed. So St. John's Cemetery closed to burials in 1980. Mm-hmm. And while it's still sort of looked after by the church there, it's really expensive to maintain graves and so on. And so there is a friends group there who also go in and do gardening and sort of clearing. Your experience of cemeteries is often, I think, dictated by when it was last mown and the weather.
Yeah.
You know, go on a cold day when The grass is high. You won't hit any snakes, which is a good thing, but it's going to be cold and it might be a bit unpleasant. So you need to pick your days well when you visit a cemetery.
Okay, noted. I've got Lisa Murray here. So now we're going to a relatively new cemetery. This is the Camden General Cemetery that was built in 1903. Why have you chosen this one for us?
Oh, well, Suzanne, I was thinking, like, when I've visited so many cemeteries, it really is hard to pick your top three. But it seemed to me that it's important to remember that cemeteries are places for us still today, and people are still being buried in cemeteries. Mm. And modern cemeteries can be just as fascinating as some of the older ones. And like Camden Cemetery was first set apart in 1903, so it is over 100 years old. So there are some early graves there, relative to when it was established. But what I loved about Camden Cemetery when I went there was it was, towards the end of September, which is the end of the rugby league season. And it seemed like every family had gone and put the flags on the graves, and they were all showing their colours. And it seemed to me it was a very vibrant place for that reason.
Now, I know here there is a children's section, which you don't see in that many graves. Tell us about that and what it's like to be in there.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Not many cemeteries have this. I can think of one other example. Gore Hill Cemetery has a children's area. But this one, a more modern one, I think is a bit more unusual and perhaps reflects the fact that infant mortality has gone down and in terms of percentages through the 20th century. And so it is all the more affecting and touching when you see these. So I think it's a way perhaps that the community there chose to sort of provide comfort to others, sort of to have infants buried together.
Mm. There's also a war cemetery there too.
There is. And I think that's really interesting. It's found at the top of a hill and it's enclosed by a hedge and it's got a formal brick pier entrance. And the reason that they're there is because Camden Airport used to be used by the RAF for training during the Second World War. And both the Central Flying School and the No. 71 Squadron of the Australian Air Force were based at Camden. And so there were some training accidents and things. And so they're buried there as well. Mm. So it has that extra layer to it.
Mm. Lisa, you just mentioned, particularly when we talked about Waverley last time, that there'd been the Devonshire Street Cemetery, which had been demolished and remains relocated. How many cemeteries have there been that no longer now exist?
Oh, look, there'd be at least half a dozen or more. Yeah. Mm. So you'd think burial would be for in perpetuity, but it's not the case. And look, that wasn't the case in the UK or in Europe. So it's not a totally foreign concept to actually sort of move people or whatever. But it's more unusual here in Australia where they tried to bring in this idea that the cemetery was there for all time. But reasons for doing it is because of the encroachment of the urban life around it, the need to use it for some other purpose. Sometimes cemeteries get closed for public health reasons. So a few cemeteries were closed in the 1860s and 70s because of that, in the inner west area. So there used to be a cemetery in Leichhardt that was known as the Balmain Cemetery that actually closed because it was considered a public health issue.
And traditionally in England, you would be buried near the church until I think the era of the building of all the new cemeteries there. Do we have that tradition strongly? I mean, I can think of a couple of church graveyards, but that's probably not as common as you'd find that in England.
Not so much in New South Wales. There's different traditions in different states, right. And that does reflect differences in both the government approach and also the sort of religious approach. But in New South Wales, our church churchyards or church cemeteries tend to be older. And it was, I guess, the government sort of providing a small land grant. They'd give a land grant for the church, they'd give a small bit for a burial ground, and then they might give a small bit as well for a school. So you sometimes see them in regional New South Wales, but also in Sydney, there are plenty of examples from like St Jude's Church and church and graveyard in Randwick, but down even places like Cobbity, there are fantastic churchyards as well to visit.
All right. Well, how many cemeteries would you say you've been to, Lisa?
I reckon I've been to, well, there's 101 in my book and I've been to every single one of those. But then whenever I travel, I always call in at the cemetery.
Which is your favourite overseas cemetery?
Oh, I have to say I like Kensal Green in London. Oh. Which is a different one. It's interesting because it not only has sort of above ground burials, but it has a fantastic catacomb as well, underground. And it was kind of the fancy cemetery aside from Highgate to be buried in.
Lisa, thank you so much for being our guest once again here on Nightlife to talk to us about some of Sydney's cemeteries.
Thanks, Suzanne.
It's Dr. Lisa Murray. Lisa's a Sydney historian and author of Sydney Cemeteries, A Field Guide.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.